The moment she woke up, Savitri saw that they were back at the banyan tree where they'd started. She sat up, squinting at the sun overhead. How could it be so high in the sky? Then she saw Ramana standing over her. He wore a mysterious look. "We haven't left yet," he said. "There are still hours to go before Satyavan returns home." Weakly rising to her feet, Savitri gazed at the monk as if he were a magician. "What did you do?" Ramana shrugged. "You were exhausted. You slept. I'm not responsible if you had a productive dream." Without another word, he picked up his flute, exactly as he had before, and set off. This time, Savitri followed him without hesitation. They did not take the trail up the mountain, but the path down. And after a while, Ramana said, "When I was young, there was a traveling fortune teller whose specialty was predicting the day that a person will die. But I refused to go." "Why?" asked Savitri. Ramana laughed. "I was different, even then. I used to say it's easy to see the future. I'll go to the fortune teller who can see the present. The most difficult thing is seeing what's right here." "Can you explain?" Savitri asked. "Have you heard of Maya?" "Of course. She's the goddess of illusion." "Just so," said Ramana. "But what is illusion? A kind of magic that hides reality from us? Let me give you an example. Let's say I show you a piece of ice, a cloud of steam, and a snowflake. Have you seen any water? If you say yes, then you have overcome Maya. The forms of ice, steam, and snowflake didn't fool you. You went to the essence, which is that they are all made of water. If you say no, then you fell for the illusion. The ice, steam, and snowflake grabbed your attention, and you lost the essence. It didn't take a goddess to fool you. You allowed your mind to be distracted. So it is with the soul. We look at people and see everything on the surface. This one is ugly, that one rich, this one I love, that one I hate. Yet each is Atman, the same essence in infinite forms." "Is that what you see?" Savitri asked. "Yes, and so did you when you fell in love with Satyavan," Ramana said. He gazed at her deeply. "I know all about you, princess." Suddenly Savitri's cheeks burned. Somehow, Ramana had uncovered her secret. She had been born a princess, the most cherished daughter of a rich and powerful king. When the time came for her to marry, she insisted on finding the right man herself, and so her father sent her with a band of nobles to find the husband of her heart's desire. Savitri and her guards traveled through the dense forest, and by chance, they came upon a woodcutter's hut. As soon as she set eyes on Satyavan, who was humble and poor, Savitri resolved to marry him, whatever the obstacles. When she announced her choice, Savitri deeply disappointed her father. However, after meeting Satyavan and recognizing his good heart and generosity, as well as how deeply he loved Savitri, the king reluctantly accepted his daughter's choice. Then something disturbing happened. On the three nights before her wedding, Savitri dreamed of Lord Yama, and each night he said the same thing. Satyavan would die when they had been wed exactly a year. "So you already knew," said Ramana, "and yet you decided to marry someone who was doomed. Why?" "Because I loved him," Savitri whispered. "And what is true love but recognizing someone else's soul? If you can see past all the illusions laid in your way by Maya, you will always commune with Satyavan's soul. This connection can never be lost, no matter what happens to his body." Ramana touched Savitri's forehead, and instantly she saw bodies burning on the funeral pyres beside the Ganges, their ashes escaping on the wind. "The eye can't help but see this," Ramana whispered. "Yet it never saw the soul in the first place, so the act of seeing nothing makes us believe in death." He let these words sink in. "Do you think you can stop believing your eyes now?" Savitri nodded, and for an instant she felt Satyavan's soul merge with hers, just as she had the day they met.